I'm here with Dr. Charles Miller from the ANU to discuss public opinion in foreign policy. Charles, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
So Charles, this time last year, the world was facing a lot of uncertainty. Emotions were running high with the lead up to Trump's inauguration. Media pundits were speculating on how quickly Trump could be impeached, and preparations were underway for the Women's March. Many people claim that the American public has never been more divided than it was in 2017. Do you think this is still true?
I would say that it's still true, yes. I think that the level of polarization in the United States, insofar as at least specialists in American politics tell me, is quite significantly more polarized than it was, say, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. Whether it's more polarized than it ever has been in American history, we're not so sure, because opinion polling doesn't go back to, say, the American Civil War, when presumably things were pretty polarized. So we don't really have a point of comparison, but certainly in the modern era, I don't think American public opinion has been as polarized before as it is now, certainly since Trump became president.
And do you think that the same can be said for public opinion in Australia when it comes to foreign policy?
Public opinion in Australia? No, I don't think so, actually, no. Public opinion in Australia in general, I think, is perhaps a little bit more moderate, a little bit less in the way of divided over most political issues in general. And I think that it's a little bit less divided over foreign policy as well. And one of the reasons for this is because of the fact that the Australian political parties have a relatively high degree of consensus about Australia's foreign and defence policy. It's not that there aren't disagreements, but in terms of the broad contours of what Australia's foreign policy should be like, Australia's political parties broadly agree, and this is then reflected by their partisans. So there's not the same degree of polarisation that there is in the United States, although there are still some differences between supporters of different parties.
So you said that there's a lot of bipartisan consensus in Australia when it comes to foreign policy, but I also think it's fair to say that foreign policy probably isn't an issue that engages the public as much as other issues. You know, if there's not a war going on, it's not going to be an election winner.
Right.
So do you think that the Australian public actually knows enough about foreign policy for us to have so much bipartisan consensus on our policy? And does public opinion matter on foreign policy?
Okay, so there's two questions to unpack in that one. Does the Australian public know enough about foreign policy in order for us to be able to say that there is this kind of bipartisan consensus? And the second question then is,
So the second question is, does the public opinion matter when it comes to
policy? Does public opinion matter? I beg your pardon. So with respect to the first one, I don't know just exactly how much the Australian public does know about the details of foreign policy. I suspect it's not very much. Certainly, any surveys that have been done in the United States about basic factual questions about foreign affairs have revealed things which, to people who are likely to be watching something like this, who are interested in what the IIA does, and would seem to be quite surprising, if not shocking. So, for example, there was a very interesting survey that was done where American respondents were asked to locate the Ukraine on a map, and essentially you got a fair cluster of responses that actually correctly locate the Ukraine, and then you've got a bunch of other ones which are pretty much everywhere else on the planet. Some people putting it in India, some people in the Arctic Ocean, some people putting it in South America for some reason. You would have thought that this is a quite shocking level of ignorance, essentially. But nonetheless, it has been shown that although the American public, at least, might be ignorant about a lot of the details of foreign policy, even what you would have thought might be very basic details, they still nonetheless have a kind of a coherent worldview about it. So, for example, people who are Republicans and conservatives have quite a hawkish worldview. They might not necessarily know where the Ukraine is, but they have a general set of principles about world politics, the idea that the United States needs to remain top dog, that military force is a necessary part of international relations. And this conditions how they view an issue like the Ukraine, for example. So they're able to have a view on it, even if they're not fully clued into all of the details. And I would imagine most likely that is also the case with respect to Australia. But it's a very interesting question, actually, to potentially something for future research. Now, as to the second question about whether foreign policy actually does matter, I think you hit it quite well. Can I hit hit the nail on the head quite well in the sort of prologue to your question, where you said, well, outside of wartime, it doesn't determine elections, right? And that's the thing. In order for foreign policy to really matter, it has to actually be a time of pretty acute international crisis. Usually that means a war, basically. At other times, foreign policy is not something that most voters really care about very much, because frankly, it doesn't impact their lives in the same way that, for example, the economy does, or education does, or healthcare does. But when there's a war on, or when there's another kind of significant crisis in international relations, at those times, the public are much more interested in foreign policy, and at those times, it can have a very important influence on elections. So in the Australian context, I mean, during the Vietnam War, for example, I think foreign policy was a very important issue. Initially, it was an issue which helped the Liberals gain the upper hand in Australian politics in the early stages of the Vietnam War. But then, as the war deteriorated, casualties mounted, victory seemed far off, it then became an issue which allowed Gough Whitlam, at least in part, to get Labour back into power based on opposition to the Vietnam War. So it can make a difference under certain circumstances, usually a really important crisis like a war.
Yeah, so when it comes to war reporting and media, I think in the 20th century, it's fair to say, especially the latter half, the public probably was more engaged in foreign policy because of things like the Vietnam War and the ongoing Cold War. But in the 21st century, we've sort of seen just this constant like mounting of tension and constant escalation of issues. When we look at North Korea, when we look at the Middle East, it's kind of been an ongoing conflict period. Do you think that the public's just kind of tired of having to constantly be engaged with these same conflicts of will North Korea nuke us today or not? Do you think maybe that's why people are disengaging?
It could be, but I think it's also because these threats for most people remain kind of abstract. So the idea of North Korea actually launching a nuclear weapon or there being a war in the Korean Peninsula, most Australians would probably find it quite, and most people in the world would find it quite difficult to envisage, because it hasn't happened for such a long time. I mean, the case of a war in Korea hasn't happened since the 1950s, which of course most Australians were not alive during. And in terms of there being an actual nuclear war, nuclear exchange, it's never happened. So when something hasn't happened ever or hasn't happened for a very long time, it's very difficult for people to conceive of it actually happening. So I think that that's really the reason why the public don't kind of engage with those issues quite so much. Now, the interesting thing when it comes to something like terrorism, I think the public do engage a little bit more, because that can be made a little bit more real for them. So if you look at something like the St. Martin's Place siege, although it didn't cause mass casualties in the way, say, 9/11 did, or the way a Korean War did, it's, you know, it's a place in Sydney that most Sydneysiders know about, most Australians know about. They've been there, they can visualise it, they can see how it can become real. So I think that that's why the issue of terrorism actually attracts a lot more popular interest than something like North Korea, which is less easy to conceive, if you like. In fact, there's a concept in psychology called the availability heuristic, which I think you learned about it in that Pulse 3001, where it basically says that you're likely to rate something as being much more likely to happen and likely to care much more about something if you already have experience of it having happened in the past, even if objectively it's no more likely to happen than something that you do not necessarily have experience of.
So do you think, in that sense, to combat things like the availability heuristic, it is the role of the media to make clear to the public what is and isn't likely? Do you think the media has a role to play there, and maybe fake news is kind of distorting for the public what is a more likely threat?
Well, I mean, the thing is that the media can, but unfortunately, at the end of the day, the job of the media is to make money. And if the media can make money by catering to the availability heuristic, by coming up with lurid scenarios of things that are very familiar to people but still very unlikely to happen, then that's what the media is going to do, unfortunately. And again, it's the same with politicians as well. I mean, politicians want to win votes. You know, you don't win votes necessarily by challenging people's preconceptions. You win votes by appealing to those preconceptions.
Yeah. So just to finish off, could you maybe give us a prediction of how you see public opinion going in Australia and the US in 2018?
Okay, public opinion going in Australia and the US in 2018. Well, I think one of the things that is most likely to happen when, you know, now that Donald Trump as President of the United States is, I think that we will see pretty sharp fall in support for the US alliance in Australia. So I wrote a paper quite some time ago for the Australian Journal of Political Science, in which I looked at some of the various factors which cause people to support or oppose the ANZUS alliance, essentially. One of those things are events out there in the world, right? So when the world appears to be a little bit more dangerous, for example, after 9/11, that causes people to cling more closely to the United States. But when there is somebody in office that Australians generally don't like in the United States, so George W. Bush was an example, generally support for the alliance goes down. And so I think that we would really have expected support for the alliance to go down somewhat, given that a Republican was elected in general. But given that a Republican is elected who is like Donald Trump, and Australians I don't think have a particularly high opinion of him, even relative to other Republicans, I think that's going to cause a pretty major fall off in support for the alliance. That's not necessarily going to endure if the next American president is a more reasonable individual, somebody that Australians have a higher opinion of. Then I think support could go back up again. But nonetheless, I think it's likely to take a pretty serious hit from. From the presidency of Donald Trump. In terms of Australian, say for example, Australian support for military action alongside the United States, I think it could have an effect on that as well. So if it were the case that Australian troops were seen to be being put at risk in order to satisfy Donald Trump, I think that could have pretty severe political costs for any kind of Australian leader or prime minister. And I think that there could be a lot of mileage to be had by Australian opposition leaders, for example, opposing such a thing. So it could have actual impacts on Australian foreign policy. In terms of American public opinion, I'm not sure it's going to have that much of an effect, because I think that the two sides in American politics are already so entrenched. That I think is going to be difficult to shift. I think, however, there is going to be an increasing trend away from support for the Republican Party. That certainly seems to be what most people are saying who study public opinion in American domestic politics. So people who remain remain supporters of the Republican Party in the United States generally tend to have a high approval of Donald Trump. So his approval rating with Republicans is still pretty high, but that's because fewer and fewer people are actually identifying as Republicans. It's turning people off the Republican Party, the fact that Donald Trump's administration has not fulfilled many of the things that people thought that it would. It's been generally quite chaotic. There are all of these allegations of collusion with Russia. And so I think it's actually damaging the support of the Republican Party, and we're likely to see a backlash, which will most likely lead to gains for the Democratic Party electorally. How big those gains are is not entirely clear at this stage, especially because of things like districting and voter ID laws, which tend to mean that the Democrats have difficulty translating votes into seats in Congress. But there's going to be a backlash nonetheless. In terms of public opinion and foreign policy in the United States, it's a very interesting phenomenon. It actually illustrates very well a particular theory about public opinion and foreign policy. And that theory is that individuals' opinions about foreign events are very largely driven by their partisan affiliation. So Democrats think one way, Republicans think another way. And there are graphs which have been produced which basically show what do the American public think of Vladimir Putin, broken down by party, so Democrats and Republicans. Now, a few years ago, Republicans were somewhat more likely than Democrats to be opposed to Vladimir Putin. The Republican Party, certainly when Mitt Romney was their presidential nominee, was actually quite significantly more hawkish in terms of its view of Russia than the Democratic Party was. But then, after the Russia collusion allegations came out, and Trump's relatively close relationship with Vladimir Putin was put under the spotlight, and it was perceived that possibly the Russians had helped the Republicans gain the White House, all of a sudden there was a near complete, in fact, more than an inversion. Now Republicans are significantly more likely to approve of Vladimir Putin than Democrats are. So Democrat hostility to him has gone up by quite a significant amount. Republican hostility to him has declined. And what people say is that this illustrates very well the fact that partisan affiliation largely determines your foreign policy viewpoints. There's nothing else really that's changed about, you know, Vladimir Putin in the meantime. So I think that we will see this, and we could actually end up seeing the Republicans in the United States becoming more of what might be almost termed a sort of nationalistic populist right-wing party, and which sees a natural affinity with Russia. Whereas beforehand they had been a party that had seen Russia as a major geopolitical foe, at least, if not necessarily an enemy. So that's another interesting thing to watch out for.
Well, thank you so much for joining us
today. You're
welcome. And giving those incredible insights into what we can expect in foreign policy in 2018.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much, Lynn.